Well, the new Park City Hall Plaza opened up over the weekend. In the studio to tell us just how it worked, I have Park City Community Liaison Craig Sanchez. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Leslie.
So able to open it up just in time, nick of time for the weekend?
We were, yes. We opened up actually Friday afternoon, about noon. And as soon as I pulled the barricades down, within about 3 minutes, it was full.
The parking lot?
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell me, how was it used then over the weekend?
I was up here Sunday for a little bit at the market, and it was pretty full. So yeah, it worked well so far.
What do you mean, full with cars or full with people?
Full with cars. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was for parking, and we'll use it. We have yet obviously to use it for an event. We're looking forward to hosting something at some point in time to see how it plays out.
Yeah. So I mean, is it complete, or do you need to come back and do a few tweaks?
There's a couple tweaks. We still have some cosmetic pieces that we need to do on the tower pieces, and we're working on landscaping this morning. Other than that, it's pretty much complete.
Okay. Well, I know the landscaping, where you said, oh, well, everything that was taken out was coming back, but we're missing a pine tree. I know that used to be out there, so that was moved somewhere else?
It was, yes. It was moved in the city, so we put that elsewhere. And obviously replaced some of the pears that were here and put some extras in, and pretty healthy, large-looking trees. So pleased that they survived the move.
Yeah. So what we've got, a few parking spots, and then more against City Hall itself, and then a number of handicap spots. What about the curbside then? That's right on Sweet Alley. Does that remain as 15-minute?
It'll be 30-minute once we get the signage up. It'll be 30-minute short-term parking, for similar to what it was before for the post office and the other commercial pieces, liquor store, et cetera.
All right. And in terms of, we've only lost really, what, 4 spots, you said? 5 spots?
It looks like 4. My nearest count, we lost about 12 with the walkway construction, and we gained 8 along the road. So, it looks like about a loss of about 4 spots.
So tell me about the public space. I mean, is it rentable space? Is that how it works?
Or? We really haven't gotten through that yet. We're working with special events to see how we could use it, when we could use it. We're still waiting for someone to sort of ask that question, and I think we'll decide at that point, how we're going to use it.
Yeah, I know that KPCW inquired about using it for the back alley bash, but it just got too complicated. I mean, I guess you can only put so many people there because there's no public restrooms.
Correct, right. It'd be a little bit difficult, more so than where the bash usually is because we don't have the restroom facilities. So, if we had the whole lot open instead of where we have the laydown yard, it'd probably be a little easier for us. So, we're kind of looking for a smaller event, just to sort of test event it and go from there.
Uh-huh. So what will they be leased out that you don't know? I mean, is it just for the City Hall use?
Unsure at this point.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. And
it's
so
some discussion.
Would you need like a master festival license?
I would assume so, yes.
All right. And any idea what the limit is on the number of people?
Well, just square footage-wise, I've heard the number 300 sort of thrown around. So that's, and obviously the back alley bash is usually a little bit bigger than that. So, we were concerned, obviously, about that. And then again, like you said, logistics of it are a little bit difficult.
Okay. We see liquor store deliveries every Tuesday morning here.
Yes.
Apparently that didn't get to happen last week. Well, it did happen, but tell me about it. You're calling it the Bottle Brigade?
Yes, the Bottle Brigade. It was a couple of weeks ago. We actually had to tear out some of the sidewalk out there, and we worked with the liquor store group, Eva, primarily in trying to get it organized to where we were getting a small load when it was torn out. Well, it so happens that they showed up with 4 pallets of liquor that morning. And so I made a critical call to City Hall and got a bunch of people to run down and help us literally fire line it, liquor into the liquor store. So it worked out quite well.
So as opposed to by pallet, you were just opening the pallets and then hauling them in by cases,
correct,
I guess, huh?
Correct, case by case, 4 pallets full. So
did you break any?
No, nothing dropped, nothing, everything survived. So that was the good news.
So you only had to do that one
and
week?
Everything that's started on the pallet got into the liquor store. So that was positive, too, with the group I had.
Great. That was, again, just the one week that you had to do that?
Just the one week. Now it's all back, and they can run their pallets in there from here on out.
Okay. I noticed also a public service announcement about work that's going to be done up on Deer Valley Drive. We got that underway this week?
It is. Yes, Deer Valley Drive's going pretty good with the utility work that's going on there. They've redid some of the, I know they had issues with one of the bridges up there. They did some reconstruction of that. So that's going well. The 224 is going well. Just right behind you here, we're going to have Fifth Street, the parking lot of the post office, closed down through Thursday. So it'll probably be open again Friday morning to construct a sidewalk through there. And so, yeah, everything's going well.
All right. And then we're going to start to see some work actually on 224 as well, just some paving work.
Right. We're starting some of our the city is starting some of their repaving, resurfacing projects around town, and those can be found at parkcity.org. There's a construction map that has all of those listed. The big one, MARSAC, UDOT is doing MARSAC, rotomilling that, repaving that, and that doesn't start until later this month. I believe the 27th is their start date.
Okay. And then notice, you know, with the stuff along Park Avenue there by the condos where we're building the sidewalk, you expect
yes.
to have that in by when? A couple more weeks?
It'll still be that whole project is pretty much this whole summer. That mm-hmm. side they're working on now, they're replacing some water lines, some gas lines, so that's going to take a little bit. And then when they get to the other side, to the east side, with all the commercial pieces in there, that side will take a little bit longer also. So they're looking at being there through probably October this year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Anything else you think people ought to know?
I think that about hits it.
Okay. Craig,
great.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
Friends of Animals will be changing their name and their logo, but the mission remains the same, to protect and provide for animals and place them into loving and permanent homes. In the studio with details about the rebranding and why the change, the third in the nonprofit's history, I have Board President Kathleen Toth and volunteer Sue Gordhammer. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, Kathleen, the new name is going to be what?
Well, our new name is Nuzzles & Co., Pet Rescue and Adoption.
Okay, and why the change?
Well, you know, there were several reasons for the change, but primarily we were dealing with a lot of confusion about who we were and what we did. And we found that a lot of people didn't know that Friends of Animals Utah operated not only the ranch that's in Browns Canyon, where we have a 16,000-foot square facility where we rescue our animals and an on-site vet suite, but also that we operated Furburbia, which has a very different name and is at the Tanger Outlets at Kimball Junction. And so we had two different names for one organization, and we also found that Friends of Animals Utah was confused with a lot of different organizations that had friends in the name. And so people confused us either with Best Friends, or there is actually another organization called Friends of Animals. So there was a lot of confusion about who we were, and we wanted one simple original name that really told the story of what we did.
Nuzzles and Company. I'm sorry. What is that? That doesn't say much. I mean, the pet rescue and adoption says a lot, but Nuzzles and Company is kind of vague and open. And
well, I think you'll find that the messaging that goes with the name will make a lot of sense. But really, as we examined who we wanted to be with our message and our name, we really wanted a name that conveyed that moment that we all have if you come home from a long day with your pet, and the moment that your dog or your cat walks up and gives you a nuzzle or a love, that heartfelt moment that makes us all realize how important these companions are in our lives. And so we thought Nuzzles really captured that. And the And Co. actually represents the community, because it really is a collective movement of people, from volunteers and fosters and staff members and people who call us on the phone asking for us to help with a dog or a cat that they see in the community that needs us. And so the And Co. really represents community, collective movement, a cohort of caring people.
Mm-hmm. Now, when somebody asks me, it's like, oh, well, where do I go to, you know, to get an animal? I would say Furburbia. So what am I going to tell them now?
Now you would say you'll go to the Nuzzles & Co. Adoption Center at the Tanger Outlet Malls.
But for Burbank, it's so much easier. I don't know. It just seems like you've got a lot of challenge ahead in terms of trying to change, you know, over. It just seems like it's going to be more confusing than helpful.
Oh, I think we do have a challenge, and it's our job to make sure that we communicate clearly to the community that our mission hasn't changed. We're the same great rescue organization that has been in this town for 25 years and that the people of this town have supported. But what we really wanted to do was create an identity that was not only true to our Park City roots, but also a little more contemporary. And we think that, you know, Nuzzles & Co., once you wear that hat for a little while and try it on, I think that it will become second nature and people will really embrace Nuzzles & Co. in this community. And the look of the logo and our name really is very Park City. And we really wanted a crafted, rustic, but contemporary look that fit the town that Friends of Animals originated in.
I'm going to say, just good luck with that, because people still call it Albertsons and Dan's. I mean, you can even hear people call it the Alpha Beta, and that's from 30 years ago. But
that's right. I still call it Park West.
Yeah, right. So, Sue, in terms of, I mean, as a volunteer, I mean, what were you kind of hearing? You saw that confusion as kind of people came into the different, you know, places, venues?
Well, certainly when I'm out on the trails and with my dog and I meet a dog, right, I ask, oh, you know, where'd you get your dog? And, of course, we all hear Furburbia, right? But very few people realize that, as Kathleen said, the Rescue Ranch, which is in Browns County, right, is you can also adopt animals there. And so we definitely had a disconnect between Furburbia and Friends of Animals. And so if we're looking to unify that, I think, you know, people felt that, okay, we can consider just everything's Furburbia or everything's Friends of Animals, or what about coming up with a new name? And, you know, there was a volunteer picnic held out at the ranch, 2 weeks ago? They unveiled the name to the volunteers, and it was really well received. So I do think I had that initial, what? The name's changing? But then when you hear why and going forward, I think it makes a lot of sense.
All right. So when we send people out to the Browns Canyon Rescue Ranch, we're going to tell them they're going where?
To Nuzzles & Co. in Browns Canyon.
Okay. So when does the change actually happen?
We are rolling it out today and this week, and we have various activities planned all week long. Today, the Nuzzles & Co. Rescue Ranch is open 11 to 4. We're offering hourly tours. We have free refreshments, bumper stickers, and in honor of our 25th anniversary and this rebranding, all of our animals that are over 1 year old this week, their adoption fees will be $25. So we really want the community to come out to the Rescue Ranch and see what we've been up to and come out and take a look for themselves and see the new name for themselves, because we think they'll really like it. Tomorrow, the Nuzzles & Co. Adoption Center will open, and again, we'll be offering the reduced fees for all of our pets, and we'll have free refreshments, balloons, bumper stickers, temporary tattoos, everything you could possibly want. So we want people to come in and see what we've been up to.
So that's also 11 to 4 then?
The Adoption Center will be open Tuesday through Saturday, 12 to 6 and 12 to 5 on Sunday. We're also very excited to unveil our new Nuzzles & Co. van. So we'll be driving around town with some free stuff to hand out. We hope people will honk and wave, stop us, come by and see us, and we will be giving out a lot of free stuff. So look for the van all through Park City and the Wasatch back.
So the van actually doing the shuttling between the Rescue Ranch and the Adoption Center? Is that what you're using it for?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We have a van that brings the dogs and cats from the ranch to the adoption center every day, and then takes the dogs home at night so that they have an opportunity to stretch their legs, go for walks, play in the agility course.
Yeah, certainly some would say, I mean, this is an expensive endeavor. I mean, not only are you paying for the marketing itself, but the work to change all of the logos and the signs and even the stationery. I mean, wouldn't the money have been better spent on the animals?
I'm so glad you asked that, because we have spent no money on this. At the same time that the board was really doing some soul searching and thinking about our name and our mission and moving forward, we had the fortuitous event that we responded to an RFP, and we were chosen by the powerhouse MRM McCann in Salt Lake City ad agency, and they said, we want to do a pro bono project, and we want to do it for a year. And so they looked at our organization and said, you would be perfect. And so really for the last 10 months, we have been working with an amazing team of dedicated people who have fallen in love with our vision and our mission, who go home to their own rescue cat or rescue dog at night, and are completely and totally dedicated. We spent the whole weekend, this holiday weekend, working with a team, getting last-minute changes and finalizing our website, and they are gung-ho. And they have, in addition to not only providing hundreds of pro bono hours at no cost to this organization, they have secured free advertising and billboards and printing. So we have beautiful new brochures that were donated, and billboards that are going to be up on I-80 that have been donated. And so they have just worked nonstop behind the scenes to really help us not only rebrand, but to now spread our message and get the word out.
And so they paid for all of the new signs and as well, or is that coming out of your pocket?
They have actually gotten those donated.
Wow.
From their vendors. So they're a powerhouse and they're committed. So we could not have been more fortunate.
You may have thought twice had that you not had that offer on the doorstep, huh?
Well, absolutely. I think changing the name of an organization, especially a nonprofit, and in a small town, it's something that you would not want to do without professional help. And I don't think we would have even begun to walk down this path had we not had professionals behind us saying, we can help you do this.
All right. In the meantime, though, you're looking for a new executive director, and you're kind of filling that role for now?
Right now, we have a director of operations at the ranch and at Ferberbia, and we're just kind of watching how we've reorganized the structure, and so far it's working pretty well. And our director of operations oversees both the rescue ranch and the adoption center.
All right. Then in terms of fundraisers, I know you've got one coming up, I think, later this month. Then the board's just taking care of that and volunteers?
Yes. Well, we have a couple of fun things coming up. We have the Jupiter Bowl, and that is going to be our nonprofit, Bowling for Madness. We've teamed up with about 8 or 9 other nonprofits, and on July 26, we're all going to descend on the Jupiter Bowl, and we're going to bowl for good. And we've asked other nonprofits in our community to join us, and many of them have signed up, and they're getting their teams together, and they're selling tickets. And I think it's going to be a great event. It's the first year we've done something like this, but we really wanted to celebrate the nonprofits here in Park City. And then on August 28th, will be the Miss Kitty's Barking Ball, which is our premier gala event of the year. And this year we're very excited because we'll have our new name, our new brand, and lots of other surprises that we will be excited to share with the community.
Okay. Anything else either you wanted to mention? All right. Great. Well, good luck, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having us.
Well, coming up on Friday, the Park City Film Series presents the documentary Beyond Limits, a film documentary, Bonner Paddock, a man with cerebral palsy, and his historic climb of Mount Kilimanjaro. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Bonner.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So begin, if you would, by just telling us a little bit about yourself and why this was something you wanted to do, climb a 19,000-foot mountain.
I guess everybody has a moment of insanity. So now it was actually something that was driven. I began telling people that I had cerebral palsy for 30 years. I kept it secret. probably less than a couple dozen people that knew I had CP. So during that process, met an amazing family and boy that had a very severe case of cerebral as well. And fortunately, he suddenly passed away at 4.5 years old. So kind of watching the family go through that and being, you know, have a very good connection with them, I kind of tried to make it my mission to help as many of those other JCs out there that are still with us to, you know, get them the physical, occupational, and speech therapy that they may need. So both through inspiration of what I may be able to do physically, but also the way that I could raise a lot of money and awareness for those people out there really, you know, fighting that disability. So I think that's a quick freeway version of what led me to climbing that mountain and trying to raise, you know, as much money as possible. And then had a documentary film crew decide they wanted to go with me. And we went up there for 8 days on Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. So,
what talk a little bit about CP. There's just varying degrees of it. I mean, you say you were able to, you know, you tried to hide it, and sounds like you were pretty successful at that.
Yeah, well, it's easy for me to pass it off as like a knee injury, or I hurt my ankle, or, you know, hurt my hip. I mean, those are kind of the things I told people when they asked about that. And as soon as they basically had a time in their life where you get approached by people, they have, you know, quick questions or don't ask or stay away from it. So cerebral palsy is one of those things that people have heard of but don't really know how it happens. And it's something that can happen so easily to any child during the birthing process or very early on in life. So primarily when the umbilical cord is wrapped around your neck and it causes random parts of your brain to die and, you know, kind of affects each person differently. And that's why you see such varying degrees from Jakey, who couldn't walk or talk, to myself, who, you know, I'm able to do physical things like climb Kilimanjaro.
So when did you climb Kilimanjaro?
I climbed it in 2008. So it was the first part of September of 2008 that we headed over to Africa.
Yeah, and why such a challenge then for you specifically to do that? I mean, what about CP that made this such a challenge?
For me, most of us, like, we have very, very tight muscles. I have spastic diplegia, which is a type of cerebral palsy that I have. So it's just basically if you haven't worked out for like 6 months, or you went out for a long hike or first ski run of the season, and, you know, you're a little sore the next day after that, and those muscles are extremely tight. Well, that's what it feels like for me every morning. So doing stuff of, you know, exercise for a long amount of time with, you know, very tight muscles and everything, which causes cramping and tearing of the muscles, you know, it's very difficult for people with that type of disability. So I think that's the easiest way to kind of explain what cerebral palsy affects a lot of us. And some of the people you see, it looks like their arm or their leg is very locked up or stiff, because that's kind of our brain's default. So to do kind of physical exercise like that, it's very difficult for people with CP.
Yeah, so how long did it take you to climb the mountain?
The whole trip was 8 days, and so it took us about 6 days up and then 2 days down. So you kind of gradually work your way up, so no altitude sickness or the best chance of it, and then you want to get off that mountain as soon as possible.
And that compares to how long for an able-bodied person?
It varies. People can take, you know, as little as 4 days or so, 4 or 5 days to 10 days. It kind of varies on, you know, that's the magical thing is people never know where your ceiling is at in terms of altitude. So, you know, there's a bunch of athletes that have tried it, like Martina Navratilova and, you know, David Beckham, and a lot of others have gone over this and tried to climb Killian. It's very interesting to see some make it and some not, who obviously are some of the best athletes in the world. So it has something to do with your physical, but also mental, and then your brain area and how well you ascend and how quickly you go up the mountain and those types of things. So there's a lot of varying degrees on mountain climbing.
Yeah, well, very impressive on your part there. The film's been out, I believe, since 2010. What have you hoped that the film would do? I mean, has it been the fundraiser that you had hoped for?
Well, yeah, so the Park City Films, they're amazing. So Katie there has been just awesome. And last year, through, I work for Young Market Company, and so so we distribute the wine and spirits, and then we thought it'd be great to do kind of a screening of a documentary about sommeliers called Somm last year, and did some glasses of wine, and they asked me to, you know, come out, and it benefited my foundation. So it seemed like it went really well. Everybody was unbelievably nice, and there was a lot of people that came. So this year they said, well, why don't we, everybody was asking about your documentary and everything else, so why don't we do that this year? And I said, well, I'd love to. And our schedules worked out and everything. So that's kind of how it all came about for this year.
Well, great. So again, it's happening Friday night, 7:30 p.m. I don't know the specifics. I don't know if that's when the doors open or if that's when the film is shown. But your $30 ticket gets you in, again, for some wine tasting that you're bringing in, you said?
Yeah, so they can have, they get three glasses, they get a whole bunch of wine tasting, and then also my book came out as well, so they get a copy of the book, and I'll be there to sign the book, so, and then they get the documentary, so.
Great. And your book, so when did that come out?
That came out just in March, so it's called One More Step, and it obviously chronicled the climb of Chile, but also another world record attempt that I did with, which was Ironman Kona, and the world championships over in Hawaii. So I attempted to be the first person with cerebral palsy to do that as well.
Did you finish?
Absolutely. 21 minutes before the 17-hour cutoff.
Great job. Again, and then all the proceeds of the evening benefiting the Ohm Foundation. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I started the OM Foundation after getting back from Africa and just seeing kind of the need of the kids over there, how much even less they have than we, you know, are so fortunate here in the United States. So I said, I needed to start my own foundation that can both help kids here in the United States and inspire them, but also the amazing kids that I had met when I was climbing Kilimanjaro in 2008. So I fund the whole foundation out of my pocket, so 100% of proceeds and everything else go directly to building early learning centers or supporting the therapy services to kind of keep those kids getting the therapy they need so they can be physically able to go out there and hopefully do things like what I'm fortunate to do.
Okay. Well, good luck. Again, the doors do open at 7:30 and then the reception taking place. The film will be shown after that. People can reserve tickets in advance at parkcityfilmseries.org. Anything else, Bonner?
No, thank you very much for having me. Hopefully get to see everybody on Friday.
Okay, thank you. Coming up July 31st, August 1st and 2nd is the 46th annual Kimball Arts Center Arts Festival. And to make it work, they need hundreds of volunteers in the studio with a plea for help. I have Kimball Arts Center Volunteer Coordinator Samantha Greer and Debbie Cooley. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Samantha, how many volunteers do you need to make this work?
We need about 700 total.
And you have how many?
444, so we are getting close, almost close. We need many more.
Okay. So you've been doing this, Debbie, for a while?
Yes, 2 years.
Uh-huh. And why did you decide to step up?
Oh, I just enjoy it so much, meeting all the interesting people that attend the festival, meeting the other volunteers. It's just a great time.
Yeah. So, Samantha, what do people need to commit to?
So basically only one shift is required. It's about 4 hours long throughout the weekend. Multiple areas are available. We are encouraging people to sign up for two or more shifts, and if they do so, they'll be entered into a raffle to win one of two prizes. And they're both pretty like high quality, so it's really helping people want to step up and do two or more shifts.
All right. Well, I went online and noticed that there several shifts have been filled, so what's left?
So the things that go fast are usually the beer garden and the VIP tent, and I feel like that's natural. But at this point, the most help we do need are the entry gates and the kids area. Those are the two big areas that have a lot of volunteers that we need to make it successful.
All right. And those shifts are about 4 hours long,
mm-hmm.
then?
All weekend. They do fluctuate based on the hours, but it's between 3 to 4 hours per shift.
Okay. So what do you get out of it?
Cool t-shirt, yeah. And we get a swag bag full of goodies. We got last year's skull candy, earbuds.
And that is coming back.
And gift certificates and things like that. They treat you really well as a volunteer. They have a volunteer lounge where you can go, and there's food and cold drinks all day long during your shift. So it's
Yeah.
It's really a lot of fun. Yeah,
great to be a volunteer.
So where are you working, Debbie?
I do three shifts all weekend long. I like to do Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the first day, I always work in the kids' tent because I'm an art teacher. So I love to see all my students come through. Then the next day, I'm working the VIP tent, which is always a lot of fun. And then the last day, I take it easy and work in the beverage trailer.
All right. And then, so with the kids' tent, I mean, you just need to be able to work with kids. You don't need to be artistic or anything.
Oh, no, you're just helping them do the crafts. There's usually three or four crafts that they can go to the different tables, and you just help them out. It's just always a lot of fun.
Okay, how do people then sign up?
So we have several links on our website. If you go to the homepage of our Kimball Arts Center website, there's a banner at the top with volunteers needed. And if you click that, it'll take you directly to the website to sign up. And other than that, there's the Kimball Arts Festival website that's separate from the Arts Center. And on there are basically all the different ways to be involved in the Arts Festival, including volunteering. There's job descriptions of the volunteer opportunities on that website as well. So you can kind of get an idea of what each area would involve. And then there's a link to sign up there.
All right. And I know that to work in the beer garden, people have to be TIP certified, and the Kimball's offering that free
of
charge, I think, right?
So we have two sessions, July 14th, 6 to 8 p.m., and then, let's see, July 27th, 6 to 8 p.m. So you just have to come to one of two shifts. You don't have to come to both. If you are going to be serving alcohol, you do have to be TIPS trained. And it does last for 3 years, so if you did volunteer in the past 2 years and have your TIPS card, you don't have to redo it.
Okay. Anything else people need to know?
I think that's it. It's a lot of fun. The group so far is really diverse. It's really great. We have the youngest age we allow is 12 years old. And I'm really encouraging parents, if you do have younger kids, about 12 or 13, volunteering with them is a great idea. That way they can kind of get an introduction and you can help them if they need it. But other than that, we really are excited for anybody that's willing to help out.
Okay. So that's 250 more people or 125 people working two shifts.
Yep.
Great. Okay. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.